ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, ¡golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, July 18th, 2018. Joining us on the line right now from the SoCal News Group and famous author of a great book called Ali vs. Inoki. You should read that book, by the way. Josh Gross is on the line. Josh, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're doing really good. Dwayne Rollins, of course, is on the line as well. Josh, I want to start the show today by asking you, of course, you cover MMA since 2000, one of the most famous voices on the mixed martial arts side, but where does your love of soccer come from?
I think from my mom. She was German and grew up in Israel, and I think brought a lot of that European influence to my love for soccer. I was fortunate enough when I was a kid to be able to travel with her, and I went to Italy and I played soccer, and you know, I wore Diadora cleats, like that kind of thing, you know. Nice. So I always felt like the game was really great to watch and be around, and I experienced it in the American side. I played a lot of youth soccer. I rekindled my love in 2009 when I felt like I wanted my nephews to feel that as well. And so I really sort of found world football again. And it wasn't just about the U.S. men's national team for me. I really discovered the wider game in a real way. And, you know, since then I've paid much more attention. And when there was an opportunity to cover some soccer out here in Los Angeles, I really jumped on that opportunity and I've enjoyed every minute of it.
You mentioned, of course, L.A. with LAFC, the club expansion club this year, that are doing really well in the quarterfinals tonight of the U.S. Open Cup. What is your first impression of LAFC so far in L.A. with Banc of California Stadium, still undefeated, by the way, at Banc of California Stadium? How do you feel about the beginning of the season so far?
You know, I think it's a real net positive, no matter which way you look at it. From a perspective of, oh, this is a first-year team, an expansion team in Major League Soccer. You know, they're up there with the Chicago Fire in terms of the numbers that they're putting out, the records that they're setting. Also, they're doing things that no other team has done. I mean, Adama Diomande has set goal-scoring records for them. Carlos Vela, Marco Urania, Omar Gaber, these are players who went to the World Cup. You know, they continue to set the bar and try and establish themselves quickly as not just a Major League Soccer brand, a team that's known inside the United States or in Los Angeles, but as a world football club, one that's going to be in the buyers and sellers market during transfer windows, one that's going to sell players to Europe instead of just buying them from Europe. So I think an extremely ambitious group, and you know, they've had an impact in LA. I think to me, as someone who's born and raised in Los Angeles, who's followed Los Angeles sports, LAFC has had quite an impact on the soccer scene, especially when you consider that the LA Galaxy, 10 miles away, have such a storied history in Major League Soccer. But I don't think that they've translated as well as what LAFC has tried to do in its early days in the Banc of California Stadium in South LA. Has a lot to do with that. I think playing soccer in the heart of the city, bringing different parts of the community together through its supporters group, they've done things in ways that I think other Major League Soccer teams wish they could do, and it's been really interesting to watch.
Well, Josh, continue on that vein. I am curious, and maybe even take this on a personal level, why LAFC has succeeded in sort of grabbing the hearts of people in L.A., more so than the Galaxy, and certainly more so than we saw with Chivas USA. Can you speak to what it was, what it is about the Galaxy, what it was about Chivas that was unsuccessful, and how LAFC has managed to turn that around and make it successful for them?
Yeah, I can try. You know, I didn't pay a ton of attention to the MLS before I started covering it this year, but I knew of the Galaxy and obviously knew what they've done over the years. They've been extremely successful as a franchise. To me, it always felt like that they were a suburban team to Los Angeles. They weren't like a Los Angeles sports team. Carson, where they play, is not really Los Angeles proper. It's further south from the city. So I think a lot of people felt disconnected to it. Chivas USA played their games on the same grounds at the StubHub Center. It felt like a Mexican team for Mexican expats in L.A. And, you know, their dissolution, the fact that they went away in 2014, really led to LAFC. LAFC rounded up and made the supporters who wanted to support a local football team but didn't want to support the Galaxy. They brought those people into the fold early on. Their input was extremely important in terms of the design, the look, the feel of what LAFC became. So I think it was just really organic. And I started observing it pretty late in the process after the colors had been picked, the crest had been picked, some of the players had been picked, they formed a team. The stadium rises almost out of nowhere as quickly as it did. And I think a large part of it, too, is the ownership group. Very famous names. I think people will get caught on some of the celebrity aspect of it. But where the Galaxy felt sort of detached to me as not a team of Los Angeles, and that's probably unfair considering their history and what they've done and what they've represented for the city, and they began in the Rose Bowl. LAFC, I think, really felt like a collection of what the city actually is. And you can see that and feel it in the stands. And I think that's a pretty real thing. And so to me, those are some of the unique factors that led to what you've seen for the early popularity, early success of LAFC in Los Angeles.
Well, if I'm hearing you correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds to me like LAFC seems authentic to people from LA. Like it's LA. It's not somewhere from somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's not a glamour team that tourists want to look at. It's LA. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, it is LA, and it's also a glamour team that people want to look at because that's part of LA. So, you know, LA encompasses a lot of things. I think if you're not from LA, people assume, oh, it's just a Hollywood city, an entertainment town. It's glitz and glamour. There are a lot of working class people in Los Angeles, people from different backgrounds, all different neighborhoods in the city that seem to come together in a real homogenous way when you're talking about LAFC. And I'm not saying that the Galaxy doesn't have different people from different communities who come out to support and represent them, but I don't think it's as big as a drive, as big of a factor as it's been for LAFC in terms of the way that they want to be perceived, in terms of the way that they've marketed the club from their earliest days. I do think also signing someone like Carlos Vela was a big deal. He's a major star for Mexican fans. The crowd is not all Mexican, not all Hispanic. Like I said, it caters to different parts of the city, so you really feel that in the crowd. And I think the way that you interpret it is pretty close to how the experience has been from my vantage point.
One thing that really caught my attention as well, Josh, with the beginning of LAFC this year, and you mentioned the colors and the logos, it's a bit of a throwback to me to the Raiders of the early 80s, late 80s, and early 90s, where there's a certain attitude, and it's almost a cool thing to represent those colors, and it goes from the top to the bottom. I'm wondering if, in your experience, I know you've heard a lot about the Raiders back then, can you see a certain correlation between those two brands, you could say?
Well, I used to go to Raiders games at the Coliseum, and the Bank of California Stadium is literally across the street, not even like a street, it's almost a driveway. From where the LA Coliseum is. I went to those games. Those Raider games were terrifying, and I was a Raiders fan. That is not at all the culture of what you get from the supporters from LAFC, at least so far. I think we'll see a real test of what their supporter culture is like on the 26th when the Galaxy come for the first home game after that crazy game down in Carson, the 4-3 match in March. So, I think that some of that attitude comes across the black and the gold. Maybe there's some of that idea. It's sleek and it looks good. But to me, the franchises feel really different in terms of what they're trying to convey in terms of what their supporters look like or what they represent. You know, the Raiders were always outlaws, outcasts. And I don't feel that about LAFC. LAFC is trying to be something much larger than that. They want to be inclusive. And I think the way that they handled the chant in the first home game that is so prominent from Mexican national team fans on goal kicks, this sort of homophobic chant, the way that the team wiped it out the team that the way that the supporters in the stands police themselves, I thought it was extremely impressive. And it said to me that this was a club that cared about the community. It cared about the people in the stands. And in that way, very, very different than the Raider experience.
Of course, tonight, I had to cut myself too. I'm so used to saying LA Galaxy. Every time the words LA come out of my mouth, I want to say Galaxy. LAFC tonight in the quarterfinals of the US Open Cup. This being the first trophy and the first tournament they have a chance of winning, how important is the game against Portland tonight?
Well, they said from the beginning of the season that the Open Cup is a priority. And I believe it's extremely important, especially considering all the circumstances. They're unbeaten at home. This is a knockout game. Portland's unbeaten in 14 straight. LAFC's been rolling. So they're a Western Conference rival. LAFC hasn't beaten Portland yet. They're one draw and one loss. There's a lot on the line. And I the Open Cup is so fascinating to me. As someone who loves soccer and grew up really where the U.S. men's national team was what American soccer was, that's how I perceived it. I look at the Open Cup, which is a 105-year-old tournament, and it gets no attention in the U.S. People just don't pay any mind to it. And I think mostly because they don't know it exists. So it's been really interesting for me to watch it and get a feel for it and see how the players interpreted what it was and what it means to them. And I dig it. It's like pure competition. And it's the closest thing you get in American soccer to promotion and relegation. You get teams from different divisions, if you want to call them that, with the chance to compete against one another. I think it's fascinating. And this game against the Timbers tonight and the three other games across the country, I wish they were televised nationally. I wish people were paying attention to them because it's pretty cool. Especially, we just got done watching a World Cup, which is a great tournament. This is a tournament too, and it's all knockout. I think the game is fascinating. And where, it was a sellout on Sunday for the MLS match, I don't know how many people are going to show up on Wednesday night because that just seems to be the attitude around these Open Cup games, and I think that's a little bit unfortunate.
And so that's a debate that we've been having in soccer circles for a while. But to turn our attention to the overall season, you mentioned how there's glitz and glamour attached to this team, and we all recognize who those players are. But I'm wondering what you two have taken away from the great start LAFC has had in terms of an unsung hero. Who has been a key player that people aren't talking about that has absolutely been vital to the success of this team this year?
Sure. I think there's been a few. One guy that jumps out to me is Marc-Anthony Kay, this midfielder. He was in the USL last year with Louisville. I think won a title with Louisville City. And his progression has been really excellent. Tall midfielder from Canada, Toronto. And under Bob Bradley, who's LAFC head coach, I think he's come such a far way. His patience on the ball, his ability to possess, his ability to see the field open up and facilitate for others, really excellent. The last night game that they had, I think it was against the Philadelphia Union, and he just distributed the ball and just had some gorgeous assist and his just ability to focus was so much better than it had been earlier in the season. He's a guy that has gotten a lot of run and gotten a lot of time to play. And as the team gets more depth and, now they're going to have Andre Horta, who's their third designated player signing, who's a big hotshot Portuguese young midfielder who plays the box to box. He may limit some of Kay's time, but he's a guy that really stood out to me. And when he's playing well and the midfield is playing well, LFC has been a very difficult team for other MLS teams to handle. So he's someone that especially jumps out to me.
Just as a full disclosure, I covered Mark when he was an amateur, so I'm happy to hear you say that. To end the interview, and we do thank you for your time, you're obviously a person that's most famous in another sport that's kind of sometimes, I don't know if niche is the right word, because both soccer and MMA have massive followings, but do you see similarities between the fan bases of those two sports?
I don't see a ton, and I know that there are people who love both, and I would classify myself as one of them, and there are others. I don't know that I see a ton. I think, MMA is constantly juggling this idea of sport versus entertainment. What is it really? And with soccer, you get football, and it's like the results are the results and you move on to the next day. And I think, for me, I appreciate that quite a lot. I think they do cater to different people, different audiences, different temperaments. And you can like both. You know, or you can just pick and choose one. But I don't. I definitely think MMA is its own world. It's this hybrid sport that really asks a lot of the fans who support it, and a lot of the people who pay attention to it. Sometimes it can be overbearing in a lot of ways, and you know, we're seeing more and more its popularity grow in the last few years. I think niche is fair. I think it's a sport that caters to a specific kind of audience. And, you know, soccer seems like much more of a large scale game, something that translates to people all over the world. MMA does for its own reasons, but it's a limiting sport. You know, not everybody's going to want to see people fighting in a cage. And that's a real thing. So that's a serious hurdle for the sport to get over, and the perception of that. It's been a long battle. So I don't see too much. I managed to enjoy both. And, you know, I'm privileged to have covered both. And, you know, my limited time covering soccer, I've really enjoyed it. And my time covering MMA has been quite a journey as well. So I'm fortunate for the chance to do that all.
All right. Before we let you go, let the listeners know where they can read your soccer work. And there might be some out there that aren't familiar with your other work. So shoot that out too as well.
Sure. My soccer stuff is for the Southern California News Group, which is like all the local papers in Southern California, except the LA Times, really. So the LA Daily News and the Orange County Register and a bunch of other different imprints around Southern California. So you can check that out. You can check my Twitter. It's at @YAY_YEE. And for mixed martial arts, you know, I do most of my stuff for The Guardian, a major newspaper out of England and Australia and the U.S. And I have a podcast as well on Patreon. So you can find all that stuff on Twitter. But yeah, I appreciate you having me on and talking soccer. And just my first official soccer interview, guys. So thank you very much. I hope I sounded like I knew what I was talking about. And I thank you again for having me on.
First of many, sure. I believe, Josh. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Dwayne Rollins at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme. This show is brought to you by sportsinspired.ca, the official store of the Sports Podcasting Network, where you can get your beautiful mug like this one, t-shirts, polos, jerseys, all available at sportsinspired.ca. We're back with Dwayne Rollins as well on the line. Dwayne, I always like when we have new voices on the line. Josh is a well-known journalist across the United States who has a very interesting history covering mixed martial arts, now covering soccer. I love hearing new voices on our show.
Oh, especially new voices that, you know, are professional podcasters. So yeah. The addiction and the ability to answer a question in an exact, succinct way that you can't underestimate when you're interviewing remotely, like Kevin and I do, how awesome it is to have someone who you can tell by their diction when their answer is going to end. But at any rate,
I know, right?
A little inside.
It's a little inside football. Baseball? Okay. Inside football. It's not baseball. It's the same. But it makes a lot of sense. Speaking of inside, Josh mentioned the U.S. Open Cup, not on TV. And we have the same problem in Canada as well with the Canadian Championship this year, not on TV. We'll have more on tomorrow's Patreon's exclusive, the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for Patreons only. But I want to put a little teaser out there. Let's just put it this way. Go back about 2 months ago when Canadian Soccer Business was created as the official business side of the Canadian Premier League. And their first contract was a 10-year contract with the Canadian Soccer Association for the managing of the rights and their negotiating arm of the Canadian Soccer Association. I don't think it's a coincidence that that happened and this year's not on TV.
No, probably not. And I suspect that the Voyageurs Cup contract will be wrapped into wherever they sell the Canadian Premier League contract, and I think that it's going to be a really terribly named streaming service is what I think that's going to end up on.
We're not going to mention the name of the service. That will be for tomorrow's show, but let's put it this way. There was an event a few days ago or yesterday, and there was a presence of the Canadian Premier League at that event of that said streaming service.
Yeah, and it makes sense. It's a perfect fit for that streaming service that is I wish they'd redo. I don't know whether they have a worse name than Real Salt Lake, but it's pretty close. But at any rate, or unless it's 1996. Did we travel back in time? Maybe we did, nonetheless. Quickly, Kevin, I just want to finish the thought to the interview there, and I want to explain that last question I asked to Josh. What I was thinking in my head when I asked it about whether there's similarities between soccer and MMA is it's sort of that access to entry point, like sort of the barrier to entry point that some fans feel. And I think that the U.S. Open Cup, to tie it into this, and the Voyageurs Cup, has an element of that. Because to a casual sports fan, as much as we in the bubble don't really appreciate this, this multiple-tier parallel competition thing can be really confusing to them. And not that I'm saying they should never give that up, but that is, I think, a barrier to it. And I think it's what creates this sort of niche and this sort of protectionism that exists within the world of soccer. And I'm not a huge MMA fan. I'll watch the big events. I absolutely will. So I'm not averse to it, but I see a similar barrier coming in as someone who doesn't know what the hell some of they're given technical terms and jargon all over the road. Right. So that was kind of where that question came from, Kevin. I just wanted to throw that out there. Cause I didn't want to, I wanted to explain my question, I guess.
And for a total neophyte, when you come into both sports, it's a lot to take in at first. It's a lot, and you have to almost pick and choose and ease yourself into the sport as a whole. So I can understand what you're meaning. News, some news, a trade involving a Canadian team and a lot of money. I was actually surprised by the amount. One of the players you covered before, I covered him here in the national team and in Montreal, Raheem Edwards, packing his bags, going to Chicago for $400,000 of targeted allocation money. Dwayne, the impact. Actually made profit on the trade of Raheem Edwards, according to what they paid earlier this season in the trade with LAFC and all.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be curious whether some of that money will trickle down to the club, to Masters in League One Ontario that had, or ANB, pardon me, I guess it was. Forgive me if I mix that one up. I always mix those two clubs up, but whether there'll be a solidarity payment made with that. So that's something to watch really inside soccer in that point where we're going to. But nonetheless, what it says, and I was surprised by the number two, because Raheem Edwards has really struggled this year. And I don't think, because it happened, if you think about how the circumstance that had him move to Montreal, which he would have spent most of his development looking at as his biggest rival. He suddenly overnight plucked from a championship parade to going to his biggest rival and having to put on a jersey that he was brought up to dislike, right? He never really settled there. I don't think he ever was happy there. Montreal Impact fans, quite rightfully, don't like him for that, and I get that. But think about it from his perspective, like how sudden that move was. And this, I think, is for the best. He clearly has a lot of talent, and Chicago recognizes that, and that's why they're spending this money right now. And I think that this might actually be one of those things that works out for both sides, because I think Raheem Edwards taking that one step away, I don't think he ever gave up being a TFC player. I think you told me a story about him cheering a TFC goal in the Montreal Impact dressing room, right?
Cheering against, but, you know, hate and love are not that far apart. So I think there was maybe a certain chip on his shoulder, and cheering against Toronto kind of is cathartic in a way when you might be not still happy about the trade a few months ago. And for just to add to your point, Raheem was never comfortable in Montreal. With the media, with his answers, with his relationship, with a certain aspect of this club, it was never the way the club intended it to be. And the club had maybe a different idea of how to use Raheem Edwards, and it never panned out. And, you know, for once, not necessarily a mistake, but a move that didn't pan out hasn't taken 2-3 years to move away from that. And Montreal were able to find a destination for Raheem Edwards. $400,000 is a lot of money. And it's not a coincidence that on the exact same day, Mathieu Chouanière, brother of David, signs his first homegrown contract. Montreal gets $400,000. There's another move in the making, in my mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely there is. It's got to, you know, be used to address that sort of situation. It's a great, great sort of play for Montreal, for sure. They have $400,000. Allocation that's very useful to help on the cap situation, and I think that, as I said, when it comes to the player situation, the player position, it's an opportunity to completely remove himself from any frustration, any sort of lingering whatever that he had from the sudden move from TFC. And look, I can understand Raheem Edwards being angry at TFC. I also see TFC as being really in a tough position because of the stupid expansion draft. And I hate the fact that expansion teams, what did LAFC, like, did these teams really need the help that they got? No, I think it's pretty clear the last two expansions that you don't need to be handing them assets from other teams. They can do it themselves. That's my takeaway from that. And this, you know, I think is a way that is going to give everyone an opportunity. Now, at this point, too, Raheem has a lot to prove. He played very well for the first half of last season. 12 months ago at this time, we were talking about how it was unfortunate that he wasn't eligible for the Rookie of the Year because he clearly was the Rookie of the Year at that point based on a reasonable interpretation of what that means. I think Mark Anthony Kay could have the same argument right now, but he's also ineligible. But putting that aside, he didn't play a lot in the second half last year, and that had to do with just the talent in front of him in Toronto, and then he has to move to Montreal, barely plays, and falls out of favor. Now he's in Chicago. He has a fresh start. You're only going to get one fresh start in this league. If he falls from here, you know, welcome to the Canadian Premier League, Raheem.
That's exactly what the Montreal fans were saying him and Petrasso, but that's maybe a bit unfair on Petrasso and Raheem Edwards. But, yeah, full disclosure, I like Michael Petrasso. I don't believe he's the next Oyongo or even a Daniel Lovitz, but he's got his qualities and used correctly. Like Rumigana found ways to use him recently correctly. He has his upside. Speaking of upside, let's put the entire show together and wrap it with this, Dwayne. Portland are playing LAFC tonight, and Portland announced a big signing on loan for now with a possibility of a full buyout in the next few months. Thomas Konechny, a Argentinian midfielder, striker, that could be a very good signing for Portland, the club from the Cascadia region. He's from San Lorenzo, same club Nacho Piatti was, from the Superliga Argentina, and he's on loan for now with a possibility of a buyout. He'll be with the club as soon as he has his ITC, his International Transfer Certificate, and receives his medical and his P1 visa. But once that is done, this player could become really useful for Portland and their chance at a double. They're in the conversation for the Supporters' Shield. They're in the quarterfinal of the U.S. Open Cup tonight. This could be a great signing for Portland.
Yeah, and it's in the vein of what we've seen before. This loan with an option is something that a lot of teams in MLS are doing, and it's a smart way to do business because the fact is, as much as we want to look at Argentina, South America as this, you know, free-flying plethora of, you know, it's like a big field that you can just go pick players from, right? Like, we look at it that way, but the reality is, like, for every great success story there's been out there with South American signing MLS, there's been at least one failure to go along with it. It's a hard adjustment for a lot of these guys. So you bring them in on a loan, can their talents translate? Can their, you know, can they adjust to the language, to the culture, to everything that's around that and thrive in Major League Soccer? Some of them absolutely do. Some of them absolutely don't. And if it doesn't work out, no harm, no loss. You had him for half a year, you send him back, right? Yeah. So it's a smart move for Portland, a team that we did pick I picked them to win the West, I believe, in my preseason poll. So this is a nice addition for them. And, the U.S. Open Cup, I think Portland and L.A., you know, we'll talk about ending the show, maybe end it this way as well. I really like the fact that LAFC has put this much attention to the U.S. Open Cup. I think that any expansion team coming in should absolutely be all guns blazing for it. Think about the success of the Sounders in the later part of the last part of the last decade, where they were winning that trophy and what that meant for propelling that team into the consciousness of the greater Seattle sports of fans. It didn't matter that the U.S. Open Cup wasn't that well known by the general fan in Seattle. The fact that they won it consistently in those early years told people in that market that that was a team that wanted to win. And I think that that is vital, and it is absolutely, you could draw a line from the success that they had in the USOC to the success that they are continuing to have in the stands. And I think so. I think it's absolutely to their credit, and it's to LAFC's credit that they're going all in on this competition.
The Canadian Championship resumes tonight. I'll be going to the Stade Saputo tonight to cover Montreal-Vancouver, the first leg. There's Toronto-Ottawa as well in Ottawa tonight for the first leg. Games are not televised, so make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Kev Larme. I'll be at the stadium early. I'll do videos with the starting lineup. I'll do a halftime review, and Tristan and I will do a post-game review as well after. So follow us on social media at Kev Larimer for myself, at 24th Minute for Dwayne. And tomorrow we have a special Two Solitude Soccer podcast for patrons only. So make sure you go to patreon.com/sports podcasting network. Behind our paywall, we'll explain to you exactly what we know so far about the Canadian Championship, Canadian soccer business, and the TV rights. And as well, we'll give you a rundown of tonight's game. So make sure you go to patreon.com/sports podcasting network. $2 a month will give you access to the Two Solitude Soccer podcast. And as always, you can follow Dwayne at 24th Minute, myself, my personal account at Kev Larimer. And until tomorrow, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.